Hi, I'm John.
And I'm Ron, and this is Digital Divination on the No Direction Network.
All right, we are back for episode 42. That is the answer, yes.
To a lot of things, life, the universe, everything, you name it.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. We're recording on Saturday night before Halloween, and I got to tell you, I was debating on whether... So my wife went to Utah for something with her sisters, so I'm alone all the weekend, right? And I'm thinking... Okay. Okay, I have a choice here. I can go out and get candy and then spend 3 or 4 hours tomorrow night handing out candy. Or it's a gorgeous day, I can drive up to Camino and forget about handing out candy. So I drove up here to avoid the horror of Halloween and having to hand out candy to kids.
Do you normally get a lot of trick-or-treaters?
Well, prior to the pandemic, we were getting like 70 or 80, sometimes 100.
Wow.
But
that was our, when we lived in Illinois, that's how we would get a lot. And I have to tell you a little bit about the long con I was trying to pull. We don't get very many here. Yeah. We've got, if we get 20, that'd be like a really big year prior to the pandemic. Now we get almost nobody. But we're ready. I mean, we're ready for maybe the 20. No, the long con that I was getting ready to pull is while we were in our house in Illinois, and we would get a lot of trick-or-treaters, I was the house on the block that was giving out the full-size candy bars.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And I wanted to be full-size candy bars. I wanted people to know about it. I wanted kids to tell their friends. So I was full-size candy bars for 3 years in a row. And then that fourth year, I was going to switch to giving out toothbrushes.
Wow.
But that we moved before I got to that fourth year. So it was nothing but good feelings left in the neighborhood. So I didn't get to play my long con, and we don't get enough trick-or-treaters here to make it worthwhile.
Yeah, that's funny.
But I did also, I've been talking to, because tomorrow's Halloween, and that's when we're going to be doing the trick-or-treating.
Yeah.
When I grew up in Utah, we would never do trick-or-treating on a Sunday.
Right. So that's what my cousins or my nephews and niece, they went tonight and got like pounds and pounds of candy.
And they're in Utah? Is that?
Yeah. Yeah. They're in St. Ivan's, Utah, actually, near St. George.
Oh, yeah. My brother and his whole family are out there. My brother just sent me a picture of the haul that his youngest son had made. And one of the things he got was a container of Domino's garlic sauce. You know, the little container where you peel the top off?
Wow.
It was just one of the things that apparently in all the chaos, somebody had ended up passing off some garlic sauce as the candy in a trick-or-treating. So somebody was frankly running out and was just trying to give the kids any old thing they could.
You should give money then, coins. You're out.
Or toothbrushes. Anyway, right. I guess that's all. I'll quit with my long con.
Well, what are your kids doing for Halloween tomorrow?
Well, they're going to be doing trick-or-treating tomorrow.
Yeah.
But we've got a part of our little town that gets way more people than we do here. And so we go over to the other part of town. And it's been the one year we made kind of the walk over. It was really rainy and drizzly and kind of gross. So it was a sad walk, but it was pleasant because they ended up getting so much candy out of it. This year it's going to be nice weather plus good candy. So maybe very nice.
Yeah, it's cold out, but it's not rainy, which I think is the big concern here typically, you know.
Yeah, I do. I agree. We went 1 year where all three of my kids were, we had a homemade costume where they were all parts of a train. It was cute. It was really cute. It was all cardboard. It was painted red. They were a vibrant red train, and it was an engine, and then the middle car, and then the caboose. And they went with their two friends, little neighbors next door, who were twins who were dressed up as Luke and Leia, which was kind of funny because they were twins. Yeah. But it was really rainy that Halloween, and the red paint ran in the rain all over everything, including Luke and Leia's white costumes. So they were a very Halloween-y, blood-soaked looking Luke and Leia going out trick-or-treating. It was unintentional, but people thought that was amazing. They thought it was exactly what they'd intended.
that's what you meant by that. Very cool. Well, neat. Are you going to dress up?
Oh, I am not. No. I've got a my wife and I have yet to decide who's going to be the go out with the kids and who's going to be staying at home to hand out candy. I don't know. I could go either. I may end up going with the kids just because, you know, going out, seeing neighbor. I'm also, I'll point out, like 3 days before the election I'm participating in. And so any last minute handshaking and reminding people to vote that I can do, I may do while I'm out.
Yeah. So do you have any idea how it's going?
Oh, goodness, no. I think that, you know, when the votes start coming in, as they're tabulated, as we do mail voting here,
right?
Then I'll be able to see and get a good sense. But I don't have a particularly good sense. I hesitate even saying whether it's 50-50 or 70-30, you know, whatever the chance is my way. It's easy to run as a reform candidate. Mm-hmm. But it is also very easy to win if you're an incumbent because you've got the name recognition. So I don't know. I don't know yet which way it's going to go.
Yeah. I don't know how you would figure out that kind of thing.
Well, I've got I've gotten some support from people that I know who've been very positive. I have fielded several questions from prospective voters asking about my opinions about things, and from the honest answers that I've given, I know some of them I've lost their vote and some people I've gained their vote. So it's hard to tell from a very small sample size.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I'm wishing you the best for you, even if that means not winning, so you're not so busy.
That's true. I suppose the way I've been thinking about it is that I win either way. Sort of help out the kids in the school district on the school board, or I continue to do kind of, you know, the things I've been doing, working with my city's planning board and things like that. I win either way.
Yeah. No, I it's kind of neat, you know, and I'm curious to see if you win, if that ends up being a stepping stone to bigger and better political things for you.
We'll see. There's only going to be one way to find out.
All right. Well, you know, in light of the fact that this is the night before the big Halloween night, I thought we could talk about one of your favorite genres, and that is horror.
Ooh-hoo.
And in particular, you know, horror in Starfinder. There's a little bit out there, you know, put out by Paizo. And then I know you've been working on some other stuff. I don't know if you can talk about it, but I think that's something that can be done better than I've seen out so far.
Yeah, I do think that there is a lot of room, a lot of opportunity in Starfinder for horror. There are a lot of different subgenres in horror. They're sort of the gory slasher stuff. Body horror is usually a big part of science fiction that marries really well the concept of, well, we've got ultimate freedom to control how our bodies are shaped, control how other people's bodies are shaped. Mm-hmm. And if that's unwilling, then there's a very big segment of horror there.
I've seen that kind in Starfinder.
Yes.
Yeah.
So. Yes. And there's some ways that a system like Starfinder, there are some types of horror that it doesn't necessarily handle particularly well. Something like gothic horror, mm-hmm. where the dread gets ratcheted up as you uncover secrets sort of slowly. Gothic horror is not one where there's an awful lot of fighting or even conflict generally. Mm-hmm. And a combat-based, skill-based game like Starfinder tends to drag a little bit when there's not some of the combat and skills. That's why you see some of the slasher-type horror, body horror-type stuff, the kind of thing that can really come out in Starfinder, where some of the real slow burn type horror requires that the players willingly give up a lot of the things that they expect the game to do long enough to play through the story about what they find. I think you could do it in Starfinder. I think that actually there is a really neat intersection of the types of horror stories where you're sort of unraveling some sort of doom-filled mystery slowly. It's interesting and exciting to think about how that can be done given computer systems. You're not paging through old tomes, but looking through old computer archives and the secrets that are buried there. Some of the games that do, some of the games that can handle deep dives into that sort of thing well, games where they've got a system of hacking or the internet where you kind of go bodily in, and instead of looking through old files, you've got to kind of hack your way in as a persona in the system, can actually have a lot of sort of horror tropes built in when you're sort of creeping around while you're hacking for information, which is sort of an exciting way to do things.
Yeah. I'm just kind of thinking what makes horror kind of scary for folks. Like you talked about kind of body horror, so lack of control. You know, I'm thinking a lot of, that you mentioned the dread. There's also kind of a lot of suspense, a lot of unknown. And, you know, one of the things that really affects me with horror is that you know there's something bad about to happen, but you're not quite sure when and how, you know. And, I remember seeing, when we first started playing Dead Sons, and on the, this is some spoilers here, but on the Acreon, I actually thought this was going to be kind of a horror-based encounter because of some of the things that we had run into there, kind of dead bodies that had been mutilated from the inside and all kinds of stuff. And it's like that kind of stuff, that kind of build up there, having little bits and pieces here till you find out what it was. And then it turns out it wasn't all so horrible what it was.
It was still horrible, but
yeah, what it did to you was, but it wasn't the unknown, the dread of what could happen, the suspense, that's what really gets to me on things. I actually don't enjoy, body horror and stuff like that, but something when you talk about the dread and the unknown, that's something I think works for me, but it's hard to put that into a campaign.
Yeah, very, very much so. And it requires a great deal of skill to put it together as far as a GM goes. It requires a lot of player trust. I guess that's part of the key issue for any of this horror we're discussing is player buy-in. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to lay the groundwork with your players, not necessarily to tell them, hey, we're going to do horror and this is going to happen. Mm-hmm. But you want to find out ahead of time, do you have any players that just don't want horror? Yeah, I mean, are they playing the game to sort of escape? They want escapist fantasy and horror is something that doesn't appeal to them or unnerves them. Mm-hmm. Is there any particular type of horror that they don't like? I actually had a convention game. I don't know if I've mentioned before. 42 episodes is a long time. I had a convention game that has stuck with me even after all these years, where the GM kind of laid it out and said, okay, we've got kind of a horror story we're going to tell. And we knew that going into this convention game that was of his own design. He said, what I want to do is I want to circulate a sheet where you write down anything that you just rather we not touch on in this. He said, I'm going to go first. I don't like anything that has to do with the eyes, right? He says, for some reason, that just weirds me out too much to even put in the game. Nobody getting stabbed in eyes, no like disembodied eyes rolling around on the floor. just way too much for me. So I'm going to put eyes on this list. And then he passed it around. And anything that we felt like we didn't want to have, somebody who's afraid of spiders, right? Had this, you know, sort of deep arachnophobia. He's like, I don't want anything related to spiders. Like, totally appreciate that. So he was making sure on the fly that we had buy-in from the front. He was building it on the fly based on what we had said at the front we did not want included that would bother us too much. Mm-hmm. He also had the an X card in the table, even if we hadn't said something, but we started to veer too much into the territory that we didn't like. We had the tool at the table to reach out, touch that X card in the middle. No, you don't have to say anything. It's just we move the scene on to the next scene without dwelling on whatever it is we're dwelling on. So that was handled very, very well to get player buy-in. But one of the things that was particularly effective about that I realized in retrospect is when he's asking us what types of horror do you not want to see, he's also very subtly laying the groundwork for this is going to be horror and there's going to be a lot. And so when the action maybe wasn't as quickly flowing as there might be in another role-playing game of that type, because he was building suspense, we were all kind of grounded and expecting suspense to build in that kind of horror stories that you were talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's kind of neat. So you kind of knew it was coming in. Now, you didn't know what other people excluded, right?
I don't. I happened to talk to Arachnophobia, somebody else mentioned. When they took the thing, they're like, oh my goodness, yeah, I'm going to put spiders on here, right, because they didn't like it. I myself, I'll tell you what I put on was any kind of violence against kids. Mm. That's the kind of thing that gets me to shut a horror movie off, right? I have too much to worry about being a father of three already. I don't need, you know, stalkers going after little kids. That's the kind of thing that, yeah. Ugh.
Right, yeah.
But no, I don't know what the other people
would say. Yeah, and so. I don't even like, I can't even imagine somebody would consider that.
Well, and it's part of the thing that is sort of taboo from a Paizo perspective. I'm used to that because we have sort of some pretty bright line rules about no harm to children and no sexual violence. Just out, they're just out of our stories. And I had I actually had a really good conversation on a side adventure that I put into a Pathfinder story, which had some kids who were hiding in the middle of a house. Their dad had been killed by the evil people that had taken over the house, but he'd come back as a ghost and was sort of like violently protecting his kids. So when the heroes come in to take care of these villains, they also have this ghost who, you know, being in a ghost-like way, was confused about who was who, but was absolutely not going to let anybody by because he was, even after death, a loyal dad protecting his kids. Right. And, you know, I had a conversation with my developer about, where does this go along the lines? And I kind of had them roll their eyes and say, all right, well, you know, a dad who would try so hard to even protect kids after death, that's Ron Lundin all over it. We're going to let that one go.
Wow. Well, I know you're working on some stuff related to horror and Starfinder. Can you talk about any of that?
I don't know that I can, actually. I think that there is probably some, I think anybody who takes a look out there can see an awful lot of fun, a lot of fun horror type stuff out there. I think it's probably been announced. It has been announced that I'm joining the team that's working on the Grimmer Space RPG, which is a very directly horror sort of sci-fi experience. But I don't want to go into details about what I've done for them. Right. I want them to be able to keep their secrets there. But it is a lot of different types of horror. It's taught me a lot. Working on that has taught me a lot about horror or in RPG writing generally and horror in Starfinder specifically.
Can you talk about their space a little bit?
Yeah, so they're actually, it's a super interesting sci-fi setting, nothing to do with the Pact Worlds. And from a very high level, it's sort of a a sort of a galaxy with a hole punched in the middle. And that hole punched in the middle is where awful, awful things come from. And sort of the closer that you are to that space, the more overt and obvious the horror is. And the magic comes from a source of horror. It's a low magic setting because magic is always bad.
It is. So all magic is.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. All magic comes from a sinister source. And there are stories, plenty of stories to be told about people who want to use the magic for good, but don't, right? That's not how magic is intended to be used. That's not how magic is going to let itself be used. The further out you are, the more from this sort of the hole punched in the middle of the galaxy, maybe the safer you are, but in fact, it just the more subtle the horror is.
Right.
And so people are around, the cleverness of the name Grimmer Space is the G rim is the rim of worlds that, are different, different types of, cultures. Some of which consider themselves to be doing just fine, but in comparison to their neighbors look at them and go, oh no, ew. You're not fine, right? You've got these weird ghosts that stalk your streets, and you may consider them sort of, normal, but they're not, and so on. But yeah, it draws heavily on all kinds of different horror movie tropes. They're a lot of fun. Some of the writing I've done for that has really had me delve into some of the areas that I might not have otherwise considered. I talked earlier this episode about how gothic horror sometimes just doesn't work. Right. But I've explored gothic horror in Starfinder in my work with them. So, some tricks to get some of those themes across, I think, are something that's easy to play with once you've sort of delved into them. One of the things that they've done, I think, very well, that is maybe the best advice I've heard recently for horror in RPGs, is that they don't ever want to tell the players how to feel when something happens. Instead, they're all about setting up to show what NPCs feel when something terrible happens. So if you walk into a room and if you walk into a bar, tavern or something, and some big insect monster is, rising up from some booth at the back, you guys is going to attack the players. All right, well, out comes the laser guns and everybody starts a fight. No big deal. It's kind of usual Starfinder type fare. But if this big insect monster rises up and everybody in the bar starts to react with shock and horror, and so much so that, blood's running out of their eyes and their ears, something terrible is going on here. You're able to assume nobody's told you as players be afraid of this insect guy, but when you see the reactions of other NPCs, oh gosh, maybe we should be afraid of this insect guy. So, as an example, that's a lot of different ways to run this type of horror stuff.
Yeah. So, now, did you do one of the Signal of Screams books? Because I don't remember.
I did not. And in fact, Signal of Screams is one of those few Starfinder APs that I haven't contributed to. And I haven't run on the assumption, on the hope, that someday I get to play it.
Okay.
There is, in fact, I know enough to know I've heard there's some kind of twist.
Yeah.
And that makes me want to find out even less about it. If somebody tells me, oh, there's this movie, it's really good, plus there's a twist, I will go out of my way to not read any reviews, to know as little as possible about it going into it. And somebody said that there's something like that in Signal of Screams, so I've gone out of my way to avoid it. That's probably a mistake, because now it's so old in the Starfinder AP listing that I don't know that I'll ever get a table of it read going off. But
I played it when it came out, and I'm not a big horror fan in terms of the gaming, but I think the big issue is the person who ran it didn't do a very good job. And so I had no idea what was going on most of the time. I mean, it was basically just encounter. And he wouldn't set the table very well. He just kind of, talked about something. And I never got a sense of, I got more sense of deception rather than sense of, you know, fear of unknown and something that might happen and dread. And so it didn't strike me as, except for like a couple parts that had, you know, kind of definite X card potential there. It didn't do much for me. Now you might enjoy it if somebody who actually knows how to run it runs it well for you. Yeah.
Well, and somebody who's sort of, you know, really thoughtfully delves into the fact that it's the horror one.
Right. And I think that's the issue. Well, this person's run some other stuff for us and it's all kind of turned out the same. So I think it wasn't so much what was written and developed, but more who was kind of putting it together. So, now what about bringing in some other genres into Starfinder, like, you know, Call of Cthulhu or something? Now, how would that work?
Oh, that table's already been set. I love it. And it's been set in two ways. The, first of all, right in the core rulebook, Nyarlathotep, mm-hmm, who is one of the mythos deities, is one of the core 20 gods of the mm-hmm setting. And I think there is, it's a shame there's not more done with, Nyarlathotep as a key god, but also one of the main planets, Octurn, is some sort of, you know, gestating horror of some outer god. Yeah. That is sort of it's the evil Cthulhu planet. I'm really excited that I got to write that entry for Pact Worlds. That was an awful lot of fun. And one of the things that is sort of intentional about writing that is to not go into a lot of detail about how Octurn relates to the other factions and planets within the Pact Worlds. Mm-hmm. Partly because it doesn't, mm-hmm, right? It stands apart in a lot of ways, but also because the sort of stories you want to tell there are the stories where the characters are apart. They're away from people who can help them that they know. They're you know, the stewards aren't going to be able to rush in and save them. Yeah. You know, it being away from everything else is part of the horror of that. But it's not like a scary planet set out in the vast. The fact that it's a part of the Pact World means there's sort of looming shadow of, okay, what can it do to the institutions and the people and the planets that we know and love? So I think that is a, you know, a gun hung on the wall in the first act that I'm looking forward to seeing go off in the third act of some later act, maybe, of, the way they're running Starfinder.
Yeah, I did a Starfinder scenario that was based on Octurn, and in the description of it and everything in the buildings inside, definitely was horrific. But I think, again, when you're playing it in the light of day in society, you have a mission to go accomplish. It doesn't seem all. It's much more mechanical than somebody who would really kind of paint the horror of all these things that are happening to you, things attaching to you from the wall and pulling you up, and, you know, the kind of the living buildings and all kinds of stuff. It's like, yeah, that's really gross.
Well, there's always some sort of disconnect there in the rules of the game, right? Because no matter how horrifying it is to say, oh, this monster, you know, reaches its spectral claw within you and tears out a piece of your soul. As scary as that is, when you say, okay, what do I write on my character sheet, right? What is it, minus one piece of soul? How does that even work? Oh, you've taken 1d6 wisdom damage. All right, well, that's inherently less threatening.
Right, that's the issue, right? You just, you know, I think if something happened to you and you didn't know what was happening, you know, so you didn't know, like, that your constitution was slowly going down, like the GM is recording that without you knowing, and all of a sudden you're slowing down and getting fatigued and or whatever, you know. But
right, and then trying to keep that goes back to the mystery that you were talking about. I think I'm certainly going to mangle this quote, but there's something along this line about horror writing. I remember reading that you know, if you know that there's something scrabbling on the other side of the door trying to get in, well, one of the natural responses to learning that it's an 8-foot tall cockroach is to say, oh, phew, at least it's not a 9-foot tall cockroach, right? That's, you know, once you can define it, it loses some of the horror element.
Yeah, but I think an 8-foot tall cockroach is still kind of scary.
Almost certainly true. But the what that's one of the trying to keep things a mystery is one of the things that I've found many players don't do well with in a role-playing game, because they want to know, okay, how is my character affected, right? I put so much of my personality into the numbers that I've written on this page. If something bad is happening to this character, tell me what happens with these numbers, right? What's the difference? And trying to break through that to make it purely descriptive often requires bringing something that is non-numerical into play. When I talk, for example, about that, it reaches in and it grabs a piece of your soul, being able to tell somebody ahead of time, oh, this person, you know, he was scratched 3 times by this incorporeal monster, and then he was nothing but a shell and he was irrecoverable. All right, well, then it doesn't matter if the thing that reaches within you to tear away a piece of your soul, I mean, you know, you have a limited, you don't need to change any of the numbers on your character sheet. You know, you are materially closer to becoming just sort of a soulless husk of a creature, right? And that doesn't need any numbers on the page if the players and the GM are all willing to buy into that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wonder if you can, you know, if you can have a subsystem, you know, a horror subsystem for, you know, spiritual, psychological damage that happens to you because of something like this, that you would track separate and the GM could track, you know, separately. You know that something's happening to you as a player, but you don't know exactly how much and what the end point or end result would be.
Right. And you know, yeah, I think that has been handled poorly in the past where I've seen that, because there's too much of a tendency to take real world mental disabilities and handle them in a callous way, right? You know, say, oh, well, you've failed this check. Now you've got schizophrenia and kleptomania. All right, well, those are real world conditions that people who either have or know people who have those are going to be, you know, really unpleasantly shocked to find they've been handled so cavalierly in a game. Mm-hmm. So I think that any sort of tracking or conditioning like that needs to be significant enough to be scary. Otherwise, it just loses its impact, but without treading on real world issues.
Right. Yeah. That's tough. That's tough. I mean,
it's a tough line to do, a necessary one, but a tough one.
Yeah. I think you'd have to make up different things. You know, part of your system would have to have different effects, you know, a holistic effect that affected multiple parts of your character. And that was not related to a real world effect. And in part so that you kept the uncertainty, right? The fear of the unknown there. If you instantly know, you know, like there are different disease tables that you can get, you know, in Starfinder, and there's just kind of a range of, you know, you roll 1d6 and this is one of the diseases you could get from this kind of thing, you know? Well, let's not even have that. That's just, you know, all of a sudden, you know, something could happen and your psyche gets so damaged that you completely go blind, you know, even though mm-hmm. you're physically fine and no cure spell can address that, but just your sight is just, you know, you're just looking within so hard that you can't see outward anymore, you know, just some radical things like that.
I think you're really onto something there, because what you're able to do then is keep some of that mystery, because you're able to tell the players, here is the effect that happens kind of mechanically for your character, but you don't know where you don't know how bad it is. You don't know how bad it's going to get. Mm-hmm. You don't know where it's going to go. I guess even something like that, saying, all right, well, I'm going to give you a -2 to, you've now got a -2 on a bunch of, you know, on all your skills and saving throws. Mm-hmm. All right, well, that's mechanically bad. Okay, what is something really bad going to happen if I get to -6, -4? What's going on? Why do I have that? I mean, you can see that it still becomes kind of an issue.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, and, you know, actually one of the scary things that you can run into is ability damage, ability drain, you know, in game, something that just continues to get worse and degrade. And you know, if you didn't know precisely what was causing it and if it would ever go away without some divine intervention, that could be pretty serious too.
Yeah, I had early on in doing some writing for Starfinder, I had a friend of mine I was collaborating with, and he had something that did ability damage, an effect that did ability damage. And I remember at the time telling him, wait, that's not even a thing in Starfinder. He's like, it is totally a thing in Starfinder. I'm like, okay, where in the rulebook is that? And they told me, I'm like, it is totally a thing in Starfinder. Yep, my bad. My bad. You're totally right.
Yeah. Oh. I don't know. Yeah, that's I don't think I would actively be trying to do a real serious horror thing, but something that's more like you know, I watched a show a long time ago. This is a long time ago. And you may not even know it. You ever hear of Kolchak the Night Stalker?
I've heard the name, but I don't know it.
So
what is it?
So it's kind of a mystery show, and it's a guy that goes out there and solves pretty much supernatural kind of mystery things, except sometimes they aren't supernatural. They're kind of man-made, man-generated kind of thing, or there's some...
Wait, like old man Jenkins who's trying to sell the amusement park for insurance money
but
or something?
A little bit more than that, yeah. You know, but then sometimes they're not explained, right? And so one of the things that happens is you as the viewer think, oh yeah, here's the natural explanation. This is why it happened. And then there's a twist that, oh, wait a second. Maybe it's not that, you know? So again, the idea that, you know, so the heroes are going in and solving some horrific situation, and there's potentially a viable normal explanation for this. And they think, okay, that's what it is. And then you have a twist that, oh, wait a second. No, it's not. It is something supernatural or possibly was. And then that has to be followed up in the next episode or something.
Oh, and that's how a lot of really good horror movies work that you could actually put into a game, which is to say, all right, well, here's this obviously supernatural thing. Oh, no, wait, there's a perfectly rational explanation for it. Right. Or is there? Because now there's this other supernatural event. Oh, no, that's fine too. Or is it? Right?
Yes. Yeah, so, you know, that's one thing I was thinking. I like how that approach goes. I don't like the really big graphic kind of things like Saw, you know, the whole Saw series. That's not something that, you know, the escape traps and, you know, dismemberment and stuff. That's not something. But I don't mind things like, you know, Halloween 1 through, you know, 15 probably now. You know, that's very suspenseful. The guy keeps popping up right when you don't expect it and coming after you, you know, kind of thing. I think that's okay, you know.
Well, and in a Starfinder way, that's something you can do that where a creature doesn't react the way it's supposed to within the game. All right, we have defeated this creature. All right, well, the body collapses into dust and shadow, and then you hear it coming from the other side of the building. Mm-hmm. Like, wait a minute. Normally when we kill a creature, it stays dead, we loot the body, and we move on. But something's different happening here. It's a puzzle to be solved. Now do we put a final stop to it?
Well, like that. Remember that vampire we ran into that one time? It was a special type of vampire, but basically.
Oh, that's right.
What was the name of that? I don't remember what it was now.
Well, that was the was that the digital vampire?
Was it a digital vampire? I don't.
No, that was a digital demon. I'm thinking in Dead Sons, or excuse me, in Dawn of Flame.
I'm thinking.
You mean in Dead Sons?
Dead Sons. I don't remember what book, but you're coming back from this place, and there's these big walls of bone, and there's a kind of a sub boss that's there. He was like some sort of special Japanese type or Oriental type.
Vampire. That's right. The like the Jiangshi, yeah, yes. The hopping.
Yeah,
vampire.
You knew what it was. I didn't know.
Oh, that's it. Yeah, I just happened to have, that's part of the mythology that I know. Yeah, where you've got you have to pin a bit of holy writing to its head to paralyze it.
But
and I think there was something clever done with the digitization across its forehead, some sort of digital message across its forehead.
But that was one.
I don't remember how it worked out. I remember thinking that it was a very interesting play on the.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. But that's one where we thought we took care of it, but then it comes back.
Right, yeah. And we're like, wait, okay, something's different here.
Yes.
This is now the kind of, stalker, monster, killer thing that...
Yeah. And that was scary because you didn't know, you didn't know if it was going to keep doing that or how you, it took us a while to figure it out, how to defeat it. And it was a hard creature to defeat, so I don't know.
Yeah, no, I think that's right.
And the other thing I was thinking of is one of the scariest sci-fi movies I saw when I was a kid growing up, of course, was Alien, right? Mm-hmm. And this whole idea where a creature can come and gestate inside you and come out and create this enormous thing that then goes on a rampage and killing everything. There's just multiple aspects of that were just really scary to me. And that actually, in our first AP, something like that happened to you potentially. So.
Oh my goodness! Yes,
character.
Infested by infested by something alien that we didn't know how to get out. Yeah. That was kind of degrading my I want to say my constitution over time. Yeah. On the constitution track, I'm like, all right, well, I know full well what's going to happen if we don't get this thing out, but we don't know how to get this thing out. There's the mystery, and thus the horror, is we didn't know what to do.
Yeah, and it was interesting because that the creature itself that we were dealing with didn't seem all that scary, except it had these spore things or whatever. Yeah.
And once the spores got into you, they were invasive, pervasive. Yeah, it was. That was the worst part of that. The combat to begin it wasn't bad.
Right. But, so I guess what I'm getting at is, even though there's not directly, these things aren't designed to be horror, in terms of the scenario, there's still very much these little aspects, I think, throughout Starfinder where it's incorporated. And if you wanted to, you could really build up, even with existing things that we have in Starfinder, build up a horror type of campaign if you flavored it well as the GM in terms of keeping some mystery and unknown. Once your players have encountered stuff and they know what those things are, it eliminates some of it. But say if you reskin some of them, so they don't know right off the bat what it is, I think it would be really kind of a neat approach.
Yeah, or a way to flip that I've seen that is a lot of has a lot of effect is if whatever it is they meet early on and they consider it not that big a deal.
Right. Right.
But then when they meet it again, it is somehow changed, twisted, has some after effect. I guess that mold with the spores is a fine example of that. All right, well, this fight was no big deal, but oh my goodness, now what's happening afterward, right? Mm-hmm. That can happen a lot sort of accidentally in Starfinder. If a creature has some ability that, some devastating ability or mysterious ability that happens if it makes a successful melee hit on you. Okay, well, you fight maybe a couple of them at a distance. Okay, we just shoot them down. You don't ever close. You don't ever learn what the scary thing is. But the next time you fight them, you're in close quarters. They, drop down right in front of you or around you or whatever. And then suddenly they're having this effect. It's that moment of, wait a minute, I thought these were no big deal. This is a much bigger deal. This is a scary thing that can hit some of those horror tones, I think, very effectively. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think we could have something like that. Now, there is not, there's a Pathfinder second edition one shot that's out for this weekend. I was scheduled to play it tonight, but then I got too busy working. It's called Headshot the Rot. Are you familiar with that?
Oh yeah, that's a that is totally a full-on sort of zombie survival.
Yeah, I saw that. And I'm thinking, we could have the exact same thing with Starfinder, you know?
In Starfinder, yeah. With the zombie. And now that I guess that's probably, I'm probably splitting hairs by saying that's not a thing I consider horror, because even though zombies are sort of like horror movie monsters, zombies are now in pop culture to be such that they are swarms of things that you just know you have to take down fast or become overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. And so you can have bits of scary moments with zombies, but for the most part, zombies are entirely visible. You know exactly what they're going to do if they get close to you, and you can't let that happen. That's the issue.
Yeah, I was thinking more of it was just kind of Halloween-y. You know, it's like a
totally totally on point for Halloween. I will absolutely agree.
And I think there's something out. I noticed for Starfinder, I think there's something announced for December that's kind of Festivus based. I should figure out what this is really quick. So I guess what I'm wondering is, it seems like Paizo's is trying to get a little seasonal with us on some things.
Well, I think that we're always looking for opportunities to tell the types of stories that we either haven't told before or that we've maybe told before but can tell in a new way. Yeah. And so I think that having, all right, well, this is the one where you're, you know, stranded on a junker planet is a little bit a dystopian in a way that we haven't been able to touch very much before. Headshot to the Rot is a way that we can have a sort of zombie survival. It's a standalone Pathfinder 2nd Edition high-level module that I wrote that was a lot of fun, called Night of the Grey Death,
which
it goes into some of that gothic horror and kind of tells the GM up front, hey, you're going to see an unusually high amount of XP in this adventure is given out when the players discover things or when they encounter things rather than when they fight stuff. There's still plenty of fighting to be had, more than any sort of, you know, true gothic story or horror story is going to have. But that's sort of our way of touching that.
Yeah, so the one I'm looking at is at Starfinder Society 412 comes out like middle of December, called A Festive Operation. So talking about different holiday traditions in the pack worlds and stuff. So it's like, okay.
Well, that's why I don't pay as much. I'm not as close to the Starfinder scenarios as I am to the Starfinder Adventure Paths and Modules. Yeah. So I didn't have that wasn't to the front of my mind either.
Well, I only noticed it because I signed up for it, you know, so.
Oh, there you go. There you go.
All right. Well, Ron, I hope you have a good Halloween tomorrow and your kids don't overdose too bad on all the sugar.
Well, they're not. They're going to have a hard time doing that because, you know, I've got to take the daddy tax of whatever it is.
Well,
they
I hope
get,
you don't so, overdose too
on the sugar. That is a fair concern, and I'd be lying if I said it hadn't ever happened because it has.
Oh, man. I got to tell you, I was thinking I could stay at home in Bothell and hand out candy, and if I had leftovers, I would be so tempted to eat it. And I can't have that sugar because medical reasons. And it's like,
this is
the low risk play. Just avoid it all and come up.
All right, that was you passed a wisdom check in order to come up to the island and hang out there.
Okay, well, I'm John,
and I'm Ron, and this is Digital Divination.